WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I have let my hair down for this one. I've got my mask out, and this is one of the final segments I'm actually going to do here this week before I get off on a big jet plane on Sunday. I'm headed out to Los Angeles, going to fly to LAX, going to Uber into downtown LA, and the Los Angeles Rams are in the Super Bowl hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. It's almost like I didn't even know the Bengals were allowed to play in the Super Bowl, but here they are all these years later. My dear friend Mike Rosenfeld joins us now from a web connection. You hear the ads around here. He is our outsourced chief digital officer. If you've heard the ads, he'll explain to you what the hell that is. He helps me stay on the up and up and make sure that when I go places like California to broadcast back to the city with the mask on, that our stuff works at BaltimorePositive.com. What's up, dude? How are you, man? You're all glued into the NFL. You're NFL'd up right now for Super. You're ready for me to go to LA, right? Get to the bottom of this Brian Flores thing.
Yeah, well, I'm ready. I'm jealous. I mean, what a perk and a gig for you to be able to do.
They tried to take my seat away from me. Don't worry. They've tried to take seriously. After 27 years, they've tried to take my seat. Hey, it remains to be seen whether I'm inside or outside the stadium after flying out there next week. So we'll see.
Well, I'd be curious to hear how that goes, but my fingers are crossed.
Well, they're getting $10,000 for those seats. They don't. You know, I'm not worth $10,000. You know that, right?
Oh, come on now. Don't sell yourself short. But yeah, I'm very much a sports fan and. I mean, these playoffs this year have been unbelievably memorable. I wonder how the nation feels about the Bengals. I mean, LA's a major market, although I don't know that they love their Rams, yet.
They love selling the tickets to 49ers fans last week.
Exactly, right? I mean,
second time in a month they've come down there and just, like, parked. And I thought to myself, well, you know, maybe the Bengals fans will come out there and park a little bit because they've saved up money, but they're not spending $6,000 on tickets. I mean, the Bengals fan base, they're not vested in and they're not rich. So I don't know how I'm fascinated to see how a host city in LA, and I've been to Super Bowls everywhere, never been to LA. My first Super Bowl was in Minnesota in 92. And then the next two were at the Rose Bowl and then Atlanta. If you remember the original, the Cowboys won those games. It was the Cowboys era at that point. And then I went to the one in 95, and then from then forward, I never missed the Super Bowl before last year. But Los Angeles hasn't been on the rotation. The Rose Bowl was way out of the rotation. And seeing a place like LA, and you've been to LA, it can swallow the game up. But the Rams are in it, so it won't swallow the game up. You know, if it was the Broncos and the something-somethings, maybe it would swallow the game up. But I have a feeling this is a coming-out party for the Rams. And, dude, I don't feel good about any of it. Like, I've written at length about Stan Kroenke and his scumbaggery. There's being a child of the Irsay era and the Modell era and teams moving and stuff. It's always sad when a team moves, but the way that was done was beyond even – it was an inside – it was a screw job for St. Louis in the same way that the owners went in on a screw job for the Washington Commanders, by the way. I got to get some reaction on that. And now there's this Flores thing. I mean, it's amazing how good the league is, how good the product is, and how the concussion thing, the Colin Kaepernick thing, the race thing, the hiring black coaches, that they just can't get out of their way for their own power and literally their own whiteness. And and I can say that having spent tons of time around them, how white the owners are and how golf coursey it all is and how trumped up it all is behind the scenes. I think you're now seeing that, and this Flores thing's not going to go away. This is going to be bad for the league.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, this is if people aren't real and, you know, speak openly. I mean, this is a topic that most people would want to avoid. I have a very close friend of mine who was an executive in the NFL for an NFL team and an executive at the NBA. And he told me that just the, you know, David Silver and the NBA, who's the current? Is just gets it, right? And the NBA seems to get it in comparison with his experience with the NFL. And you can see that in the diversity of coaches in the NBA. And as we are talking, Brian Flores is now speaking out about his lawsuit. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. I actually find it very interesting, and I'm curious to hear what he has to say. I mean, there's still coach vacancies. His name was brought up as, you know, being surprised that he was let go by the Dolphins and likely would land somewhere. I don't know that suing the league ingratiates himself with some of the owners.
Never work again. I mean, these are vindictive sons of bitches. I mean, there's very little doubt about that. I mean, you know, look, see Kaepernick, comma, colon. You know, that's
right.
All you need to do to know where they stand on race and the gaslighting that these people are capable of. You know, from Owings Mills down, when it comes to the media, as a media member, I have been gaslit for several years now by the Ravens, on and on and on and on. It's a league-wide issue. It's a power issue. Everyone's watching the game next week. I'm getting on a plane to fly to L.A. I'm wearing a mask 12 hours a day just to be there. They think their manure doesn't stink, and they think everything they do, that they're going to freight train. I mean, look at Snyder down in D.C. Look at all of the acts that in anywhere else in the world he would be fired, he would be excommunicated. They have folded him in. They put him on the Today Show to announce his team name on the same day when they have been institutionally sued for racism, really for the second time in 5 years now. You know, it was the players with Kaepernick. Now it's going to be the coaches, you know, people like the Lovie Smiths and the Marvin Lewis's and the Jim Caldwell's and the Tony Dungy's and the people that have come before who are on the outside looking in now. It's going to be interesting. Class action lawsuit, right, Mike? I mean, that indicates that this is an open invitation, that if you are a black coach that has been mistreated in the NFL in regard to your job, that if you have receipts, now's the time to bring it.
So this is the beginning.
This is the beginning of ripping the Band-Aid off of something that's been very, very – I mean, the Rooney Rule was put in, and it has been completely – it's laughed at by these billionaires. It really is.
Yeah, it's a shame. This is not a distraction I'm sure the league wants. You know, I was – Dominique Foxworth was just saying how – you know, he was the president, I think, of the NFLPA for a bit,
Correct. Correct. Of Woodlawn, by the way. Local kid.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And a Turk.
And a
Raven. He said that the league office seems to get it. He said the league office is very diverse. You walk in the league office from the C-suite all the way down to interns, they seem to be walking the walk. But
by the way,
owners...
I had Jason Cole on last week, and I had Clark Judge on. I think it was Jason that said this. I just want, because I don't want to put words into the wrong guess, because I talk to a lot of people. Said that Goodell's legitimately, and he's known Goodell a long time, Goodell is legitimately embarrassed by it, and he makes $44 million a year working for these racists, right? And
right.
There's a feeling that Roger's not that way. Like, if you really know Roger, if you know his politics, if you know his family, if you know the way he really feels, the way that privately he speaks differently than the owners do. But then there's this 50-something-year-old guy trying to work on 70 and 80 and 90-year-old white billionaires. And there is a point where the league office would say, we can only do so much to the Washington, what's their name, Commanders, whatever their names are this week, right?
Right. Look, that's another discussion, but I'm reading, with that said, with what you just said, which is what Dominique Foxworth also reiterated, you know, I'm looking at the statement that the NFL released, and they have no choice but to back their owners. But the last thing it says, we will defend against these claims, which are without merit.
After the lawsuit was without merit. We have evidence that there's no merit, right?
Right. So
really? No, that's PR bullshit. That's gaslighting.
I hear you. So, you know, in one way, we're like, you know, Goodell and the league office is walking the walk more than the owners are, but they have... It's big business, and they have no choice but to come out with a statement at the end of it, say that we can defend against these claims, which are without merit. I mean, it would have just as easily been we hear these complaints and we will investigate these complaints instead of saying there's no merit there. I mean, it's hard to argue that there's no merit in the fact that there's now one coach in the NFL which
a guy who won 8 of his last 9 games got fired, couldn't get a job, and then has Bill Belichick sending him text saying, that job you're interviewing for tomorrow, they've already picked a white guy.
Right.
That's what went down this week. That happened this week. That is not ancient history. That's not Dan Snyder with cheerleaders 5 years ago, or John Gruden being a racist 15 years ago. This happened in front of our noses, in front of Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport, and rumors that Wink's going to get fired and this guy's getting a job. This guy's out on the street as a tenured African-American coach with a scumbag owner who told him to lose games on purpose when we're gambling on this stuff, right? Luke, throw games, dude, so we can get a better draft pick. I own the place. We're not going to win this week, right? Right.
Right.
That's against the law. Like, that's a whole different thing when you're buying pieces and stakes and DraftKings and sending me down to Sport and Social and telling people, bet on the NFL. It's on the up and up like the lottery is. The lottery's on the up and up because they actually do these things with scratch-offs. They actually give the money away. They don't cheat you. But playing football, it comes down to a whistle and a flag and whatever. That's bad enough. But what they're trying to do now in throwing games, it's a whole different level of investigation that the government should be involved in, because these guys are running rogue. It's very obvious these guys have been running rogue for a long time in the NFL, and including covering up medical conditions with players getting hit in the head.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a game we all love as fans, but it's got warts, and these warts are being exposed, and, you know...
I knew it had warts when the Mayflower Vans went out 70 back when I was 15 years old, right? We knew those warts.
I remember that. That's just another horrible experience. Which we could segue into. Look, I don't know if I'm alone. I don't really ask people this, but I really dislike the Washington football team.
I always have, because they kept football out of ball. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a radio act for young people. Young people have no idea that the Ravens really should not exist. Like, the political pressure to ever keep Baltimore from having a team, the Washington owner, him trying to build a stadium in Laurel, which is now a mall, by the way. You can go down there and have... But that mall in Laurel was going to be the stadium that keeps Baltimore out of the league, and the Maryland Redskins of Washington, of Ral John, were going to play there. And Governor Schaefer said, I will not build you infrastructure, not while I'm the governor. You're not going to get roads into your stadium. You will have no infrastructure, so therefore there will be no stadium in Laurel. Pound sand. Go put your team in Richmond, dude. Go put your team out in Reston. Go put your team out at Dulles. And that's where I came into radio, right? 90, 91, 92, 93. That was the period of time that the Redskins were about to put Baltimore football out of business forever. That didn't happen. And now consider the legacy of what the Ravens are versus what the former Washington Redskins used to be. And they're so irrelevant, though, right? Like, you and I used to go to concerts back in the 80s and see Van Halen, and we'd see some guy wearing a Daryl Green jersey or a Theismann jersey, and it felt sort of foreign to us. Nobody wears the gear. I mean, they are not just a damaged brand. They're kind of like the Orioles. They're an irrelevant brand to some degree.
Well, let me piggyback on that, because you obviously, based on what you do, have insight that I didn't, as far as what at the time Jack Kent Cook was doing to keep which frankly Angelos was doing the same to keep baseball out of DC, which is why DC people hate Angelos. But be that as it may, my experience, what I told my kids, and for your younger listeners who appreciate having the Ravens and don't know what it was like when they left, and I'm not talking about a guy who's in their 70s and 80s who talk about the glory days.
You can go to St. Louis right now and see what it looks like when your team leaves, or Oakland, or San Diego. There are places that just picked up, moved, right?
Well, listen, younger Raven fans who don't know what it was like. Imagine this. Imagine after you lose your team, you want to tune in to watch football. Now, back in the day, there was only, actually, unless you have all the cable networks, you only got, two games on a Sunday. And because the Redskins so badly wanted to ram, and the NFL wanted to ram their product down our throats so that we would become Redskin fans, and they weren't good, for a period of time after the Colts left, we would get a game like the Washington Redskins and the Atlanta Falcons.
No, it was the Arizona Cardinals because they were in the same division.
Right.
The Arizona Cardinals were in the East. They would play at Sun Devil Stadium at 4:15, and Joe Montana would be taking on Phil Sims in, you know, 9-1,
exactly.
8-2, and we'd have the 3-5 Redskins against the 1-7.
Week after week, you'd get the crappiest game that they had because the Redskins were playing some team, and we would lose the equivalent of a Packers-Bears game, you know, something that meant something. And that was for years we had to deal with that. So,
And they didn't even open a Redskins gift shop in Baltimore the way the Orioles did down in D.C., right?
Oh, yeah. And look, the current Commanders.
It's the first time you said it, isn't it? It's the first time you said Commander.
It is. I wanted to make sure I didn't stumble over it.
Makes me think of Commander Cody. Remember, he used to write those goofy songs back in the 80s, you know? I want cheeseburgers and stuff like that. Kind of like the Weird Al Yankovic
of his day.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That franchise, I can't say I feel sorry for them because I just don't like them. But, you know, first of all, it took 2 years for this branding exercise. I mean, what's the Cleveland Indians' new name?
Guardians.
Guardians. You know, it didn't take them all that long. I mean, it is what it is. I have a lot of friends in that area. I feel bad for them, but
well, the brand is such shit to begin with, right? So it's awful, and now
the stadium stinks.
The name, and I'm thinking to myself, I know a dozen Redskins. I mean, like old school Chief Wahoo, Mark Rippon, you know, all Ernest Biner, all that stuff back in the day, and they've all sort of disowned. You know, they don't go anymore. They don't tailgate. They don't make fun of me for wearing purple Barney gear the way they did back in the 90s and all that stuff. They don't proudly wear their burgundy and gold and have their bandwagon bumper stick. Like, all of that stuff that we saw and dealt with, they've gone into hiding. My buddy Scotty P, I don't think he's out buying Commander's gear today. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the feeling would be if they rebranded the Ravens that we would all want to go out and buy the new purple bird or whatever that thing is. That's the idea of rebranding, is getting people exciting and re-energized like I did with Baltimore Positive and all that. Nobody, where's the line at the gift shop to get a Commander's hat for $34.99? I don't see that happening this week. So as much as that's there, and again, this Band-Aid that's ripping off with Flores and racism, part of that is also right down into the heart of D.C. where the congressional people that were involved in regard to the Washington cheerleaders, this sort of opens that door back up that, yeah, I'm going to be at the Super Bowl next week and Joe Burrow is going to be a big deal and maybe the Rams will win and Matt Stafford will laugh, will cry, and that thug Stan Kroenke will get to say he brought football to Hollywood and it all worked out. But I think the offseason, you know, this coaching thing, race and racism, what's going on with ownership, and whether it's tolerable or not, and the courage that's going to be necessary for African-American coaches to step forward. And even a guy like Marvin to say, yeah, I had a job for 16 years, but I got treated like a black guy everywhere I went. I didn't get treated right. And for the older generation of coaches who had a job, and I mean, Marvin got screwed over by Tampa Bay for Gruden. He had the Tampa Bay job back in 01 and got passed over and had to go work for Dan Snyder for a year. So this is 20 years ago, and I remember that. And I've had some, you know, I've had some conversations with Mike Tomlin about race privately over the course of time. It comes up between he and I, and it never not comes up with black coaches. So I would think this next week's going to be interesting to see which way that avalanche goes in regard to, are they going to do what Kaepernick did, which is hang him out to dry and say, oh, he doesn't speak for all of us. Just, you know, I'm not going to take a knee. I'm going to go play football and get my pay. There is no problem with race in America. Let's just put things on the helmet. That's where the players were with Kaepernick, and he got his money. I'm interested to see if Flores is going to do this alone, or whether people are going to have some courage of their convictions to fight, because it's obviously, it's been sitting in front of everyone the way the Kaepernick thing did with blackballing. And we're still watching the games and giving them money and paying $16 for beer and lining up for season tickets next year. So that's really the way they eat, is that, it's just a little PR thing. It'll go away. That's what they hope.
Yeah, I think this is going to be bigger than that. I think based on what we were talking about earlier, there's still job openings. His name was thought that he would probably land maybe another head coaching job. He's a smart dude. He has to know that this course of action he's taken is basically kind of saying, you know, the principle of this is greater than me selfishly taking the job, because I can't imagine that he's going to get hired, but we'll see. I'd be shocked if it happens with this fraternity of owners.
Colin Kaepernick getting a job after the Pig Sox, right? Bisciotti was one of the guys. Bisciotti's on the very liberal end of these owners, and he's still a Republican. So, like, you know, there's still very much a, you know, Bisciotti's conservative, but not Trumpian, not a racist. Steve is not a racist. But how the non-racist owners relate to this, the ones that said, I didn't have to follow the Rooney rule because I interview everyone. I'm looking for the best candidate, not the best white candidate. So, but that's clearly not the way the other owners in the league think.
Yeah, I wonder how much of these old white guys are making these decisions knowingly, or it's just a subconscious way that they're wired that it just doesn't happen. I mean,
we feel comfortable with people that are like us, whatever that is, right? That's rapport. That's taught in every Dale Carnegie. Find out what we have in common, and let's work with that, right?
Right.
And the color of our skin is the first thing we see, more than the color of our eyes or the color of our hair. That is sadly America, and it's been America all of my lifetime. And I don't know that that's going to change for a lot of people. And clearly, the older and whiter and richer you are, the more skewed you might be.
And I see that.
And in the last 10 years in Trump, for to really open my eyes to, you believe what?
Right. I hear you. So one last thing I would like to ask you your opinion on. I wonder how Baltimore fans, Raven fans, are feeling about the Bengals. Are they like, for me, I'm like, okay, it's a division team, good for the AFC North, representing the Super Bowl. I'm also saying to myself, let the Bengals be in a position where they're the team that's being hunted instead of the Ravens all the time. Maybe let the Bengals have the first schedule. And let the Bengals draft 31st or 32nd so that they get a worse draft pick, and let the Bengals then ultimately go through what the Ravens are, which is when they realize how good their players are, have to lose them to free agency, and last but not least, having no faith in Mike Brown to be able to keep this together, because he's proven as an owner not to be one of the best. So that's what goes through my mind. I think it's potentially the Bengals' time. I don't have the disdain for them that I do for or competitive disdain.
You wouldn't want to watch the Browns there, would you? I'd rather have the Bengals
or the Steelers, right? And one thing I will say to you, you know, don't be shocked to see a lot of Bengals fans there. I have friends there. There are a lot of cities, including Baltimore. There are some wealthy suburbs around that city, and they've not had a championship before. It's the type of thing that you say, look, if I'm ever going to spend $6,000, $7,000, whatever it is for a ticket, now's the time to do it. Once
talking
in a lifetime.
Heads, right? It's like once in a lifetime. Once in a lifetime.
Exactly. Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was. Mike Rosenfeld is here. Same as it ever was. He's a web connection. He helps nerds like me build better websites and have better social media. And tell everybody what you do, and then I'm going to read from Twitter the great, some great tweets about Joe Burrow that I'm going to share with you.
Sure. Thank you. So Web Connection, we are outsourced chief digital officers. And if you're hearing that, you're like, what does that mean? So if you're a business owner listening to this right now, I guess the question I ask my prospective clients is, do you have any formalized digital strategy, whether it's your website, social media strategy, online marketing to grow your business. Most small to mid-sized businesses have no clue what they're doing. They may have a young intern doing something just so that they're saying they're doing it, but then there's some in their industry who are killing it and killing that. So our clients are ones who are like, I'm tired of getting my ass kicked. I don't know what I'm doing. I need someone to come in here and see what our challenges are.
Well, you know what? I hope 105.7 doesn't call you next week because they're going to be getting their ass kicked.
That's right. Well, I only take one client per category because it's impossible to take more than one because we're trying to kick everyone else's ass. So you are the only radio. And
well, find out who your best competitor is. I'll let Locke and Fora and those clowns over there and Vinny to call them, and then we'll go. We'll get them on even footing so I can kick their ass in a fair fight. How about that?
I hear you. You got it. So that helped. So, yeah, I'm curious to hear these tweets that you're going to read.
All right, social media. So I retweeted a guy that I don't even know who he is. His name is Josh Rowntree, Rowntree. So, you know, some shows do mean tweets or whatever. This was just a tweet that I retweeted. And if I retweeted, it is an endorsement for me. If I retweet it, it means that I like it. One of the great NFL storylines to come is Joe Burrow's transition from cocky yet likable to arrogant and insufferable. Going to be quite a watch. And I thought, that's exactly, like, this week I'm Zubaz. I even have the old Bengals shirt that Marvin sent me a couple years ago. With it's a little itchy, and it's like a turtleneck that turtles a little bit too much. But it has an orange B on it. So it almost looks like Baltimore. It almost looks a little Orioles-like, but it's got that Zubaz jungle thing going on there. And I'm figuring, next week I'm going to root against the Rams, even though Eric Weddle's there, even though Havin Stain's there, even though Jake Funk, who ran over my Dundalk Owls, they're all Rams. There's a part of me that just, I want the Bengals to get it over with, let them have their party, let them write their books, let them get cocky, and then we'll deal with Joe Burrow the next 10 years. You know, let them win while they're there, get it out of their system. That's kind of how I feel about it. So I'm going to treat it that way next week. But if these hillbillies come in and make it not fun for me next week, I will put my sunglasses on. I will go Hollywood next week. I have no problem doing that. So Bengals, I'm with you, at least getting on the plane. We'll see how insufferable it is by the end of next week, because if they win a bunch, they could easily be the Patriots quicker, to your point, right? Like, we could learn that if the Steelers go into a 3-13 and Tomlin gets thrown out and they just stink for a couple of years, we better learn to hate the Bengals. Luke and I have been talking about getting into a program to figure this out. How do we dislike an organization that has been so benign for many, many years? But then, as we pointed out, the Patriots were benign for a while too.
I will go on record, and then you'll say, look, they've been on a run like no one's ever seen. But I have no faith in their leadership. And I think if you look at the teams that are performing best, they have at the very, very top. Forget about their hiring.
Guys like Stan Kroenke?
But I'm talking about over a long period of time, right? That's what you said, like the Patriots. And I don't think that Mike Brown has proven that he is a leader who can make that happen. They'll have a flash in the pan, and he will screw it up, in my opinion.
Well, they screwed up Carson Palmer, right? So, you know what I mean? Like, they had a 1-1 who was a legitimate guy that – Carson Palmer stayed there with Marvin and had been happy, and he wasn't unhappy, right? They might have won. They might have gotten to. They would have won a playoff game, I think. Had Carson Palmer stayed there 12 years, they would have won a playoff game. I believe that. I do. Yeah.
So we'll keep our eye on it. But I feel like let them have their day and let them be the team that everyone's gunning for. Hopefully the Ravens make some moves, become healthy, and aren't the ones that everyone's like gearing up to play week after week. So, you know, and you know the stats about the teams who make the playoffs or go to the Super Bowl 1 year. A lot of times they don't even make the playoffs the year after.
Look what happened to the Eagles, right? Like, they won. They all had a good time. They all felt good. They're still – the polls are still greased up there, right? They're like, literally, right? They're still a little hungover. The coach is fired. The quarterbacks are all gone. The Hall of Fame – like, it feels like 5 minutes ago I was in Minnesota. It was 4 years ago, right? Like, literally. It's over. Yeah. It's all over with.
I hear you. So we'll see what happens.
Mike Rosenfeld is here. He is Web Connection. He is our web doctor around here. Keeps us on the up and up. Make sure that when I go to L.A. next week, I can kick 105.7's ass online. So go to BaltimorePositive.com. See the great work that we do. And so I tweeted this out, too. And this This is where the show stops and we go into our private conversations that we usually have every Monday. I tweeted out that I have a very serious growth mindset about WNST and Baltimore Positive this year. I'm looking for like-minded individuals. That doesn't mean that skin needs to be the same. It's not this different than like-minded, not like-looking, who did what I do and have been doing for 30 years. Things will be rocking with the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery and the new initiatives once we get to spring. I said my best days are ahead. I think you believe that because I'm going to get a haircut at some point, right?
Well, I mean, I don't think the haircut will have anything to do with it, but, you know, we work together on a weekly basis, and I can share with everyone your enthusiasm, and I feel it, and I know that you're headed in a positive direction. So I'm excited to see how you pull this off.
Does your wife give you a hard time about split ends in your hair ever? Mine's been doing it all week. She said, I need to get a trim. If I'm going to go to L.A., I need to get a trim. I said, the curls are coming in. It's nice in here. It's not a mullet. It's like full. So this is what my wife's doing before I go to L.A. So
did you ask me if my wife ever gives me a hard time about split ends?
Well, my wife, this is the conversation I've had before I go to L.A.
Yeah, but I mean, those people who are listening won't know, but those people who watch this will know that I have no head of hair, so I don't really know what
that is. Yeah, one less problem that I have. More hair, more problems.
So the answer to your question is that no, my wife does not talk to me about split ends because I have no hair to talk about, but that be that
as it may. Gives you more time to work on my website.
That's right. That's right.
Here he goes. Mike Rosenfeld from Web Connection, our partner in crime here. All of it presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll be letting ourselves play on Radio Row. Mike, I've got the inserts for the N95 for the mask to make sure. I've told all my sponsors, and you are one of them. If you want me to, like, really promote you next week, get me a mask with your name on it, because I'm going to be wearing some mask and going through these a little bit next week. I've got Purell all over the place. I've got a flashlight in case there's an earthquake. When I'm out in L.A., I've got provisions, man. I'm ready for everything. Super Bowl 56 coverage, all presented by all of our friends, including Wise Markets, our friends at Royal Farms. Dennis has gotten me a Coons mask to wear next week while I'm out in California. We got a lot of guests lined up as well. Lots of folks coming on. I'm expecting it not to be as good as it usually is because it's a plague and whatever. So I've lowered my expectations. But I have a feeling it's going to be good. Rams in the Super Bowl against the Bengals. Full coverage from L.A. all next week right here. I am Nestor. We are WNSD AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking computer stuff and making ourselves better. And hating on Joe Burrow. We are BaltimorePositive.com.